Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
Hello, hello, my wonderful audience. I'm smiling because I'm talking to wonderful Pam Popper. We haven't seen each other in a long time, except she just recently had me interviewed for her amazing website. Anybody who's been following my work over the years knows about Pam. We are friends, we are colleagues, we are comrades. She has a PhD, her background is in nutrition, but she's an American warrior. And she really deserves this concept that I have of being a refounder of America. Pam's a refounder. She is helping rebuild America. She's got an organization called Make Americans Free Again. Make Americans Free Again. Wow. We are all doing that with all of our hearts, and it's no easy thing. Pam runs annual conferences, and that's how I got to know her. She invited me to one, and it was the beginning of first improving my health. She's a great nutritionist, and my wife's health. And it was then also the beginning of my realizing that I had a very limited scope on corruption in the world, because I kept deluding myself that this deep corruption I was seeing in the psychiatry and the pharmaceutical industry was probably because psychiatry is fundamentally corrupt, doesn't have any scientific basis, is treating spiritual, psychological, social, even political issues at times as if they're biochemical disorders in the brain of some aberrant human being rather than a struggling human being. And then I'm sitting at my first conference with her, and I'm hearing the folks who are doing, you know, cutting edge nutritional work. And Pam's telling me the story about how they threatened to put her in jail and how they did all these things to her because she was teaching people about nutrition in Ohio, which meant going up against the food industry and going up against the dietitian monopoly and going up against all these different things. So I thought to myself, my gosh, I mean, this is my counterpart in the whole nutritional and broader health issues. She's running into the same attack that I did, same assaults. And wow, I got to open my eyes. This corruption is deep. So I went on deluding myself still for a while longer, thinking, well, it's in this area, it's in that area. Then along came COVID-19. And I think both Pam and I were stunned, because I think as deeply as we had gotten used to looking at corruption, I saw dismay in Pam's eyes, and I felt dismay in my own heart, because COVID-19 has just opened a giant hole into which all the global predators are rushing, and in which we can see between their rushing bodies. See, she inspires me. Between their rushing in bodies, we can see the glimmers of who they are. Sometimes they're right in our faces, you know, like Bill Gates and Fauci, Michael Bloomberg, and World Health Organization. Oh my God, the Chinese Communist Party too. Oh Lord, and we've both been just looking at a lot of stuff. Pam wrote one of the earliest books. She's very good at getting stuff out early on the subject. Again, remind me the title of the book, Pam.
It's called COVID Operation. What happened? Why it happened? And what's next?
And I got good stuff out of the book, and I'm much more of a plotter in some ways than Pam's work is just astonishing. And you know, when the clouds began to clear a little bit, she was clearing them for all of us. And she's been doing amazing, just like, it's like physical work. She's like lifting boulders and building sheds and developing concepts and putting people together. And that's what we're going to look at, the miracle, really, of Pam Popper and the kinds of things she's doing. And I do want to mention now my book. This was the July 4th weekend, tomorrow. And by the way, Ginger and I were married on July 4th, which shows the dedication, devotion we have toward freedom, traditional American freedom. And it's just been so good for us over the years. And maybe partly Pam put up an interview with me recently, but maybe July 4th activities, because I'm not actively speaking on July 4th. But yesterday, which was Saturday, we sold 400 books out of the blue. And they had been selling every day, but that was maybe a peak. Mm-hmm. That I just want to thank all the folks that are buying it. One reminder about the book, and you can get it by going directly to www.wearethepray.com. www.wearethepray.com. You can get it off our website too, bregan.com, but there's a special website for you to go to. It makes it much easier. And the first thing you'll find out is if you buy the book, you get the latest manuscript. You will literally be getting almost the identical manuscript that will be in the book, except we're still finding copy editing to be done. But the book is in the publishing process, so this the basic book is going to be there. And this is a book that lawyers are telling me they're basing lawsuits on, and people are telling me is the most in-depth coverage they've seen. So Ginger and I are very proud of this book, and go to wearethepray.com and get the manuscript instantly into your mailbox. And I think that's one of the reasons people are buying it a lot. But let me just go to Pam now. And one of the remarkable things Pam did for me in my whole life was to tell Tom Renz about me. And those of you have seen Tom by the way, our YouTube's pretty much shut down. So you need to go to bregan.com and get the free frequent alert, so you'll know when we put up things in different places. Free frequent alerts on our website. That's gone up a lot, so people are listening. And Tom Renz, I'm going to let Pam introduce you to Tom Renz through maybe how she met him and stuff like that. That'd be a good start. And that led to this book, Pam, because when I got through writing my 120-page report for Tom Renz, which I think knocked his socks off against the emergency edicts in Ohio, which the governor then withdrew, fearing because the judge had accepted the case, basically, and the governor just said, well, I don't want discovery, and he quit. But there was a victory, but not the victory of getting discovery done. But I'll just set you free now, blah, blah. I'm talking away here. I'm glad to see you.
Yeah, it's so, nice to see you, too. We talk a lot on Skype these days instead of in the same room.
Yes.
Anyway, so yeah, that's a great place to start, is how Tom came into the picture. You know, last March when this started, I put out a video on March 10th, actually. We just played it for our Thursday group here, because I got everything right, except for, at that time, I thought maybe the virus came from the wet market, but I said it was released deliberately, came from the Wuhan lab, the whole nine yards. That's where the virus originated.
You actually said in March it was deliberately released.
Yes, and that the Chinese had an incentive to do it. And by the way, I said, because I got attacked a lot, I mean attacked, right?
Sure.
And I said, listen, I hope I'm wrong, because if I'm right, we're in deep trouble, all right? But, and I also said it was a fake pandemic because it had been done so many times before. I mean, I remember 1976, I was a young adult then, when there were 5 cases at Fort Dix and 1 death, and they turned that into an epidemic. 5 cases was a cluster, and then a little bit of conversation turns into an epidemic, and the next thing you know, you've got a vaccine that's hurting and killing people. They killed 25 people and took it off the market, but still. And then in 2009,
What was that vaccine called?
It was just a flu vaccine. It was a swine flu vaccine. And had an Honest Press, and 60 Minutes actually did a story about it, and they showed how they ginned up a fake pandemic. Yeah. But they got away with it. Nobody goes to jail. Nothing bad happens. So they did it again in 2009 and 2010. And they, same thing, they ginned up interest in a flu vaccine. So I knew this was a fake pandemic. I said it was a fake pandemic. I said, there's nothing to worry about, all right? Well, as it turned out, the thing to worry about was that I was right. That's the thing to worry about, all right? Not that there was a virus that was gonna kill everybody. And that's how this all started. And I watched, there's a tendency when people get upset about something to run around and get frantic and let's just do something, do something even if it's wrong, right? Activity for the sake of activity. And I'm a little bit more deliberate. And so I said, we got to do something about this. I'm not sure what it is because I need a little bit more time to figure out what it is. And what it is became more horrifying as your book clearly outlines. I mean, the more you look into it, the worse it gets, right? So at a certain point in time, I made 2 decisions. One was that we were going to start Make Americans Free Again, because the only way they got away with this and the reason why we couldn't do anything about it is voters don't have any power. We can't go downtown in Ohio to our legislature and threaten a single state representative or senator with removing them from office by force of numbers if they don't do what we say. And we have to get to that place because these people they are there to be there. They are not there to represent us, all right? So we can talk about that more if you'd like. So I knew we had to get power in numbers. So I was going to organize this massive group of people under one very simple concept, because the political parties, their platforms are so huge, you can't get 5 people to agree on the whole thing, right? We got to have something that millions can agree on. And here it is. I don't want medical tyranny. I want to decide what happens with my body and by extension, my minor children. That's it. That's the whole platform. Nothing to disagree with, right? And then the second thing is we were going to have to use the court system because the executive branch was corrupt. The legislatures are useless. They're still passing useless laws, including the most recent one in Florida, which everybody was all excited about until I read the portion of the statute that says that the health director can, no passports, but the health director can force test, force quarantine, and force vaccinate as long as there's an emergency. Tell me how that fixes anything, right? So the legislatures were useless. And then I looked at all these lawsuits, and they were all of them lost, but they all were the same. My constitutional rights are being violated, which is true. And then the government would show up and make a very interesting defense. You're right. They would acknowledge it. And they said, but it's an emergency, right? Yeah. So I said, we have to do something about the emergency declaration. So I'm thinking about how do we find a lawyer? And then I get a phone call, and you and I have talked about God's helping us in this whole thing. This is good and evil, and we are on the side of good, and God is helping. So while this is all going on, and I'm talking to a couple of attorney friends who are retired, who are saying, yes, it's the right thing to do, I get a phone call from Jason Hedges. And he's a school psychologist in Northern Ohio who had formed a group called Ohio Stands Up. And he said, I wanted to talk. He says, I can't let this go. And I heard you're doing something and maybe we could join forces. And he says, we have this very interesting lawyer we've come across. His name is Tom Renz. And he has this idea that what we need to do is sue and claim there is no emergency. And I said, you are my new best friend. And soon Tom was my new best friend, So the first night, it was a Saturday, I'll never forget this. We had my book was coming out soon. It was July of last year. And we had my co-author and I did a little program and we were here like all afternoon. I called Tom, Jason had given me his phone number. And this guy spent like 3 hours on the phone with me on a Saturday night. I thought he's our kind of people. There are a lot of people who wouldn't do that. And that's how this all started. And he turned out to be a brilliant strategist, an unbelievably hard worker who has his heart and his mind in the right place. And we have attracted more attorneys like that, very principled people who are taking all kind of hits. I mean, if you're going up against the global cabal and the pharmaceutical cabal and everything that's going on, you're going to get attacked and all that sort of thing. And these are just people that don't care. They want to do the right thing. So that's how I met Tom, and then when this all started, I told Tom about you. And when he, after he had a conversation with you, he called, he said, Pam, you are my new best friend. He goes, that Peter Brigham is something else. I said, he is definitely something else. And so to your point about that incredible document that you wrote, really the supporting evidence for the lawsuits, it's irrefutable. And anybody who wants to read the actual lawsuits that we filed that are posted on our website, there is all that's the information showing that what you and I are saying is true, right? And it's turned out to be a wonderful resource for people who are really looking to get the truth about this. And you said in your introduction that your book is going to be used to file a lot of lawsuits. I am very enthusiastically looking forward to that day, because these people must pay for what they did. So that's how this all started. And then I figured out we had to raise $100 million to finance all this stuff. So I started these Thursday groups, and we can talk about what they do. So anyway, that's how it started.
Now, what's the best way to get to your website?
Okay, what's makeamericansfreeagain.com, makeamericans with an S, freeagain.com. That's the activism website. I give out my emails, pampopper@msn.com. And so if you want more information, we train people every week how to get associated with us and how to get lawsuits going in their state, and how to do all the other consumer activism type things that we're doing. We're very excited about some of our initiatives, and we've already made a huge difference with keeping everybody busy. See, in our organization, everybody works. Everybody has a job, and fun jobs, because we are restoring our communities. And we are, I think the big realization, and I get really excited about this, you know, the government is not going to fix this. It's not, I mean, it may rain money from Washington, D.C. because they're printing it. But if you want your local florist and restaurant to stay in business, well, we're going to have to make sure that that happens. If you want your children to be protected from COVID nonsense and psychological torture and bad education, we're going to have to take care of that. And if we want the medical censorship to stop so that we can get advice from the practitioners of our choice and learn the truth about things, then we're going to have to take care of that. The government is our enemy in this. It's not our help. And I think as people start to realize that, and also realize it's not easy to fix, but by force of numbers, it becomes easy to fix. You know, it's amazing how easy it is for 50 people to keep a restaurant in business by eating there once a week. You know, it's amazing. And we did that kind of stuff. It was so fun.
That is so cool.
It is so cool. And we still do this kind of thing, you know, because even though things are more open now than they were, a lot of these places have huge debt, you know, that they took on, they got to pay back. You know, this local thing, you know, our groups meet in person locally. And it's so important, because I live in Worthington, Ohio. You know who cares about Worthington businesses? People who live in Worthington.
Worthington.
You know who cares about the kids in the Worthington schools? People who live in Worthington, parents, right? So by making everything local, I mean, even by zip code, our groups, that's where you get this community feeling and that sort of thing. And then what's come out of these groups, and this will make you laugh, whatever you need, it comes from a Thursday group. The attorneys walk into Thursday groups. I needed a new biology teacher for our school, Thursday group. We needed a new handyman around here, Thursday group. You need an attorney, Thursday group. Everything is Thursday groups. We hired employees for Make Americans Free Again. They were the original people who came to the Thursday group. So when people write to me and they go, I've got to change jobs, they're making me get the job, I tell them, you got to get into the Thursday group system, because whatever it is that you need, your Thursday group people will help you find it. And this network that we have in Ohio that started last year, it's the oldest one, so it's pretty well established, is just a good example. Our people show up and they take care of each other. And that's what America is built on. And we have to get back to it.
So you have Thursday groups around the country?
Yes, they're growing all over the country. And we have 7 states that have affiliated with us. And we're teaching them all how to do the same thing. It's you look around your community and you find productive work to do. And one of the things, you know, this medical tyranny thing that we're experiencing, this isn't new. You and I have been dealing with it for a long time with different facets of the healthcare profession. It's not like nobody has tried to fix it, right? That's not the point. It's that it accelerated in spite of people trying to fix it. And one of the reasons is that people would put their name in a database, and I did this to an extent too. You put your name in a database and you pay a membership fee or you send a donation when you can, and then you sit back and you wait for the people who run the place to say, well, we took care of it for you, all right? Right? Well, that doesn't work. So if we want to take care of this, because now we have a big problem in America, we have a big, big problem to solve. We can't do that anymore. I have to get up every day and I have to look at what can I do today to help my community. And everybody in our group has to get up with that same mentality. There is no more passing it down to somebody else, waiting for somebody else to give you the good news about it. And when I started that, people were, it was a shocking message. You know, people would say, well, can you give me a group near me? And I said, no, I'm not your social director. Okay. As much as that sounds like fun and I'd love to do it for you, you have to start a group. You know, well, I only know one other person. Well, two people, we call that a group. And I'll tell you what you do at your first meeting. The two of you figure out how to get a third person. And then the next one just grows from there, right? And it does grow from there, you know. So now this idea is catching on because people are figuring out we have to solve the problem. We have to. We are the prey. But if the prey mobilize, as you said, you coined that term, and it's really very accurate. If the prey mobilize and get together, the predators are in deep trouble. And we're already kind of seeing the signs that we're making them pretty nervous out there. So that's good.
If the prey mobilizes,
we can overcome the predators.
I like it.
And I'll tell you, there's two reasons why I say that. Well, several reasons. One is God is on our side. I firmly believe that. And I think the second thing is that there is a disconnection that happens when you're capable of doing the things that these people are doing. You become disconnected from any of your own humanity. You have no principles.
That's right.
And so they turn on each other. You know, I think that Fauci's kind of in trouble now, and they may throw him under the bus. But he doesn't seem to me like a take one for the team kind of guy, you know. So I figure at some point in time he's going to sing. Like I'll hear the operatic melodies here in Ohio from him singing. And so these are unprincipled people who
That's
only
right.
care about themselves and their own situation. And you've seen this in mafia families in New York. As soon as they, what do? They arrest somebody to save themselves, they'll get protection, and then they turn everybody else in, right? So I think that that's one thing that we have on our side, is we only need to nail one of these people and the others will fall. I think the second thing, and this is kind of an interesting thing, I don't think they did much scenario planning on what could go wrong. And that's hubris, all right? That's hubris. We are so in control, and we're so rich, and we're so fabulous, and we're so smart, so much smarter than the prey. Nothing will go wrong. Well, what's the one of the first things that we do here when we're getting ready to do something new is figure out all the reasons and ways it might not work so that you can figure out, you know, will it work, and then have some plan for if things don't go so well. Well, if you take a look at it, things from the beginning didn't go the way they wanted them to. First of all, not all countries locked down. Well, that's a problem. And then South Dakota didn't do anything. That's a big problem. And then Florida opened up. That's a big problem. And so the whole thing has been a little chaotic for them. And then I think they intended to keep us locked down for a longer period of time. And when the Ohio lawsuit got filed, that messed everything up pretty well. So if they kept us locked down for a longer time, I think everybody would have been much more willing to get the jab than they are now. So that's not going so well. And they had to throw away 200,000 doses of vaccine in Ohio in spite of a $50 million lottery. That's not good. That's good for us, not good for them. So Anyway, we're going to win this. And that's the energy that I bring to this every day, is we're winning and we're going to win it.
God bless you.
Thank you. And God is blessing me every single day. Yes,
you've never looked more full of life and happier and more beautiful and more brilliant and more. You've always been amazing. You've always been out the ceiling. And folks, that happens to us. I mean, I'm not like radiant like Pam Popper, but I'm so much more alive at my good age of 85 and Ginger at her good age of 70 than I've ever been, and more creative. I have all these wonderful connections, new things happening. I think writing the most important book with Ginger that I've ever done. So when you get involved, you know, just start a Thursday group. Once you start that, you start having something in common with wonderful people. Mm-hmm. It's totally different than when I was doing the, I was, quote, you know, the conscience of psychiatry and heading the critical psychiatry movement, in effect, around the world. There wasn't cooperation. There wasn't love. There wasn't the kind of stuff that brings together the people who are fighting for America right now, you know, people fighting to make Americans free again. So this is just a wonderful way to get involved. And listening to you, I had a much better insight into something that I've thought about and lots of other people have thought about. When you were talking about how they weren't bargaining on what they got and what they never expected, I always emphasize the first point. They never expected Donald Trump. So once they got Donald Trump, they were really stuck and had a problem. And I think that's why they released it, the virus, when they did, because mm-hmm. Trump was doing in the entire globalist predatory system with all of its multiple connections to the Communist Chinese Party, which is just so bizarre and unbelievable. But folks, I documented in the book, we documented in the book. And there are lots of other books on the side that have nothing to do with COVID-19 that documented pieces of that communist infiltration of America and American politics long, long ago, before I ever thought about it. So that was the one big thing. They didn't expect a patriotic America. They didn't expect a patriotic Democratic Republic to be confronting them in mm-hmm. the near future. And they expected the same old Republicans and the same old Democrats. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really different than that. And I think that caused them to freak out and release it maybe prematurely without the best organization they could create, because he was stinging China. Mm-hmm. And China is the heart of the globalists, because every globalist I've looked into, and we looked into a lot of them, is making money through China. Mm-hmm. Or their families have, like the Bidens and John Kerry's family, working together, making money out of China. Not working, not setting up great businesses, just making money out of China. But then the other point you made was how one state did this and another state did that. And that, I think, was a great decision that Trump made, which was not to be himself the czar, but to create a federalist concept of state powers, let each state experiment. That is the fundamental argument that the federalists made in setting up the government, was that we were going to keep state rights, individual rights. The states were going to be experimental laboratories. And Trump, of course, was saying, well, he didn't take over. Well, he didn't take over for deep philosophic, political, and realistic considerations. Let the states do their thing. And that, despite all the power behind Fauci, including the World Health Organization, Bill Gates, and on and on and on, despite the powers that use Fauci and manipulate Fauci to do what they want, they couldn't impose it perfectly because Trump made it a state's issue. Let the governors do it. And then all the Democrat governments have showed what kind of tyrants they are. But that's interesting. I got the picture more clearly as you were talking about how one state after another. Well, Pam, this is amazing. Folks, we've only scratched the surface. We have another half hour to do the full radio TV hour. And there is one other thing I want to get into around Tom Renz, and that is the Napudi, Dr. Napudi case that you've been involved in. And to talk about that some.
Yeah, and then I want to talk about schools, because that's a big
issue. Yeah, schools, small business rescue. Yeah. We got all kinds of things you're doing.
Well, so I experienced this when I first got into business, and a lot of people have, and that is that and it's gotten worse. So you have two groups of people. You have people who hold a license to practice something. And increasingly what's happened is that your license is your livelihood, and a threat to take it away can keep you in line. All right.
Yes.
So this has been escalating for a long time. For example, in California, they passed a law saying all children had to have all vaccines in order to get into school. And a pediatrician who I happen to know was writing exemptions for children who had autoimmune diseases and things of this nature. So the California licensure board disciplined him. He's now practicing under supervision with 8 cases pending. And if he gives one more of those exemptions, then we'll take your license away. And of course, the way that this works is that other doctors say, well, I better not get into doing that either, because I've got 3 children and a mortgage. And I understand that mentality. You can't afford to be unemployed as a physician. You still have most of them still have student loans, right? So you're licensed and you're subject to that type of censorship. And then if you're not licensed, Ohio doesn't license naturopaths and it doesn't license nutritionists. And so this happened to me. If you're not licensed, then you get accused of practicing something without a license. And so that's how you shut up that group of people. Well, we've never seen anything like this, how bad it got with COVID. And I think at the end of the day, we're going to find out how many people died because they didn't have access to hydroxychloroquine, because Mr. Fauci, I refuse to call him doctor, Mr. Fauci insisted that it was useless because he favored remdesivir. And because if there was early treatment, like with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, then they never could have gotten the vaccines approved under the emergency use authorization. So this whole party line, what doctors are supposed to say, what chiropractors are allowed to do, what a naturopath that lives in a state that doesn't license naturopaths is allowed to do and not allowed to do, this has to end. There is no way that a person can ever have real informed consent, which is the business we're in, informed medical decision-making, looking at risks and benefits so that you buy medicine and health the way you buy cars and houses and everything else that is important in your life, right? Well, you can't possibly make a decision if the government's deciding what you're allowed to see, and it isn't even accurate a good deal of the time. So what happened, I didn't even know this stupid law existed, but a colleague of ours who got involved, because he owns a PCR lab, so he'll be a great witness in our trials, he got called on. He's put out a lot of videos and that sort of thing about vitamin D and zinc. I've watched the videos. He doesn't say anything about don't take the vaccine, or there's nothing on there really to be objectionable. And he gave away free 2 million bottles of zinc and vitamin D just as a public service. This is a good person, a nice man, family man who just wants to do good. So the government, the Federal Trade Commission, and the Justice Department came after him and tried to extract $8 million in fines for violating the COVID Consumer Protection Act, which is a censorship act, essentially buried in one of those great big bills that they passed in Washington, that says that you can't say anything that is different from what the federal government says about COVID. It's like living in communist China, right? So he countersued. And they came back. I think they knew right away that probably shouldn't have done this, right? They look for people that they really are looking for prey who will roll over and die and be panicked. And this guy is not that guy. So they said, well, how about $40,000 instead of $8 million? And this is a person who's very wealthy and can write the $80,000, the $40,000 check, just make this go away, all right? But he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm willing to go the distance. We got to get rid of this stupid law. We have to do this. So he has agreed to keep himself under the spotlight and pursue this. And so we're going to support it financially. It's going to cost.
Now this is just to make clear, Dr. Eric Naputi we're talking about.
Right. This is just Dr. Eric Naputi, but it has consequences for all of us because if
right. I just want people to get the name because got a little lost in the background.
Yeah, so if they can do it to him, they can do it to anybody. And the cost, and this is what they're counting on. They're counting on nobody can afford to do it, all right? Because his attorneys have told him it'll cost $2.5 to $3 million to take this the distance to get rid of this thing. And we know we'll win it in the end because we do still have a constitution, and the Supreme Court seems to be ruling reasonably well on some of these constitutional issues. So that's something we're involved in. And I'm looking forward to that because this just has to come to an end. And I remember when you and I were sitting on a plane coming back from Copenhagen a couple years ago, talking about this very thing. that you start to talk about something unpopular. You get kicked out of Cochrane, you lose your job at the hospital. I mean, this whole idea that you get in line and say what you're supposed to say. Science is supposed to be about debate. And it is okay and expected that people who study science disagree. We need for people to disagree. It's the only way you can ever make any progress, right? And so it's an important case. We're proud to be part of it, and we're going to contribute a lot financially to it.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. And, you know, folks, there are no scientific authorities. I mean, Einstein didn't stand up and say, I'm the authority on this or that. He said, this is my theory. Let's test it. I'm supporting your experiments. Let's see what we get. He explained it over and over again to help people. He wrote complex articles, simple books. Science is about the progress of human knowledge and understanding. And it's not even about a consensus. Science is really ultimately about the truth. What are the best ways to explain reality? And, you know, there is no authority in science. Whenever there is, I mean, the Catholic Church tried to be authority on science. The Russian USSR has tried to be an authority on science. Chinese communists are authorities on science. And it doesn't exist. Science is the effort of hopefully honest people, and not always honest at all, trying to figure out the best understanding and explanations for what we see going around us. And if it's hard science about the physical universe, the material universe. Fauci, when he said, I am science, I mean, I don't think the Pope ever even said that when they used to think that they could make pronouncements about science. And they still do, really. So this is very, very key. And from the beginning, Pam's goal has been informed consent, making the best possible decisions in an open free market on scientific discussion. And we must absolutely have that.
Yes.
And doctors are prone to shut down science because they kind of welcome it in a way because they've gone to medical school, they've got all this authority, they some all the weight on their shoulders, and the last thing they want is patients discussing things with them, differing with them, and it's just so much easier to be a veterinarian, and even vets, though, can be more sensitive to their patients than our doctors, because we just lose track of things. We just have this tendency toward arrogance. And since our training's so narrow, we don't really have an understanding of political issues and freedom and all that. We weren't taking those courses in college. So we're kind of sitting ducks for bizarre theories of politics or for the use of coercion or force. So, you know, you can't just put trust in my profession. You cannot do it, nor can you do it in science. I mean, you have to put it in freedom and in the right of people to talk about every aspect of their lives and of life, including science, including medicine. There's just no way around it. It thrives in freedom. And we are moving in the opposite direction now.
Yeah, we are. And it's interesting. One of my employees here just bought a house, and it took the whole afternoon for the closing. And the reason why is because there are disclosures. Okay, so the mortgage broker, whoever's doing this, hands papers to people and they explain what it is. And you have to initial here, here, here. You've been through this. I've been through this, right? That you understand this, you know the payment. Okay, that's what you have to do to buy a house. And if the mortgage broker or whoever is doing that or attorney doesn't do that and things blow up, that person could lose their license. That person could be criminally prosecuted if it appears that it's a serial kind of thing. You do it again and again and again, right? This is to borrow money to buy a house, right? Now let's go over to medicine. I want you to do this. If you ask a question, you're often, you know, arrogance is the thing. And if you're the kind of doctor who wants to have the discussion, like Dr. Napudi, and like a lot of doctors, you get in trouble for that type of discussion. So before I leave this planet, and I've said this many times for 20 some years, there will be laws in place that will criminalize lack of informed consent. We have to do that. There has to be a penalty for it, because the penalty, you know, if you sign a mortgage that you can't pay, that's bad. You could go bankrupt. If you take action medically is something that's ill-advised without the right knowledge. It could kill you. And in fact, that is what happened during this COVID thing, is that many, many people had family members who died because they didn't know they were supposed to get hydroxychloroquine. And then there were cases in New York where you live where people had to sue and go to court, and the judge ordered doctors to provide ivermectin and that sort of thing. So even when
and the doctors still wouldn't do it in many cases, which is really crazy.
Well, and because they were afraid of losing their license, because the word that came down from on high, the Federation of State Medical Boards controls what the medical boards do. And I think they're getting money from drug companies these days as well. I'm pretty sure they took money from Purdue Pharma to promote a different prescribing scheme for opiate drugs back in the day. So it's just a corrupt system. It's just a very corrupt system. And part of what creates it, and this will kind of transition to the next thing I want to talk about, is these schools. We are teaching people to not think in school. And now we're psychologically terrorizing children. And I'll share something with you that will shock you. It shocked me, and I thought I was beyond being shocked. So a five-year-old, think about what kind of person you got to be to let this happen to a five-year-old. Mother in Iowa, for a five-year-old child going to school, wearing a mask, and she got staph infection after staph infection. And they tried cloth masks and different masks, and they couldn't make this go away. And the doctor finally said, look, she can't wear a mask because if this gets in her lungs, she's five, she's going to die. So they had a medical exemption, and the school allows the child to come to school without a mask. So she comes to school without a mask, and the kids bully her. She's unsafe. She doesn't care about her. And the adults, the teachers, join in on this bullying so bad that the principal has to take the child and put her in a room by herself. Now, can you imagine? You're 5 years old. You're in a room by yourself. You eat your lunch by yourself. No humans around. No instruction. Must have terrified the kids. Like we do better for people in jail than that, right? Mm-hmm. So they then put her back in the classroom in a plexiglass box. She can't get out. They can't get in. Can you imagine this? So the child had to be withdrawn from school and she's in therapy, right? This is what our schools are willing to do to our children. What that showed me when I watched this video is that educators and school officials will now do anything they're told to do by the government, even if it involves harming little children, all right? Now, with that in mind, I started looking into something, and I'm like you. You start over here, but then you end up over here and over here. So one thing leads to another. And I found this American Rescue Plan, which is a $1.9 trillion bill, law that they passed in Washington. And in it is $122 billion, with a B, dollar provision for schools. And some of it's going to be used to bring kids who are academically behind up to par and all that. But a lot of it's to be used for COVID nonsense. And in fact, to qualify for this money, you have to you had to post on your website, if you're a school system, a plan for the whole what you're going to do with the money, including where you were going to be on certain things recommended by the CDC. So I started looking at schools, and I'll give you an example here. Pickerington is a small suburb of Ohio, of Columbus, and they got $6.1 million. All right. So here's their COVID plan. They're going to report cases to the Franklin County Department of Health. So if your little child has a cough or, you know, fever or whatever at school, he'll get reported to the county. This is great, right? And then there may be some, what do they call it? Mitigation of some type of COVID mitigation where all the kids in the class wear masks. Now, this is going to where what happened in Iowa. You've got a kid who's been deemed sick. You report them to the county. Now we have to have some type of mitigated quarantine is what they called it. So all the kids have to wear masks, and then all extracurricular activities are canceled except for sports, because COVID doesn't spread during football, only during playing the violin in the orchestra. You know that, right? These rules make a lot of sense. And then the principal sends out a letter to everybody in the school saying we have a case. And then they also say that they want to have, that they're very pro-vaccine, that they're going to promote vaccines to staff, teachers, and students, and they want to have a vaccine center in their school. Now, this will terrify you. Many states, about half of them, have something called the mature minor doctrine, which means that if a child is deemed to be mature enough to make a decision about his or her own health care, a healthcare provider or teacher can administer healthcare without the parent's permission, and vaccination is on the list of those things. So some school nurse can decide that your 12-year-old is mature enough to want a COVID vaccine. And after all, it's in the cafeteria. We only have to walk down the hall in order to do it. This is horrifying.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so we are organized. We have organized. I've had a task force in Columbus working on this for a while. And we have a conference call scheduled. We're going to help parents understand the issue. We have conference calls to help them understand their alternatives for withdrawing their children from school. We have coaches and teachers, and we're helping them get through the process of de-schooling and educating their children. And we're doing this district by district. So it's already started here, but this is where we start and incubate everything. So lots of parents are getting together in Worthington. They're arranging to hire teachers and share the cost, and the kids spend time in different places. So no parent has to be in charge every single day if they work and all this sort of thing. And we're going to get, last year we took like 80,000 children out of public school. This year, we're aiming for 500,000 to 1 million. And that's the only way that these kids are going to be safe, is just to get them the heck out of these kinds of environments where they would do that to children.
We need our own institutions. I think this is a part of, we're not going to probably I don't know how long, going to change the major media, the school system, any of the major organizations. I mean, it looks like we're going to be losing the military. God knows whether we can hang on to the police forces of the country. We're going to have to think about what kind of alternative institutions do we want to create to promote the simple, basic American values again. Mm-hmm. And you're really moving in that direction, and you're also taking on the existing institutions. I hope you're right that the courts will come through.
I'll tell you why I know I'm right. Okay. First, I know I'm right about this.
I mean, I'm working with you on all
the
courts.
So here's the thing. I said this from the beginning. We have to file and file and file and file. I mean, we're just getting the machine geared up. We need to file hundreds of lawsuits. Okay. And then we only need one judge to give us discovery, because we don't need to depose Fauci 50 times. Just one time will do. And we don't need for the Centers for Disease Control to deliver the documents to 36 places. One place will do, because the attorneys are all working together. And it has already worked in a situation that people don't know about. And I didn't know that it had already worked either. It just seemed like it made sense to me. So I just finished reading a book called Empire of Pain. And it's about the Sackler family, the people who own. And as everybody knows, they killed a lot of people with opiate drugs, and their strategy to get away with it for so many years is they were taking in like $3+ billion a year. So they had an army of attorneys working for them. And if they got into some kind of trouble, like a lawsuit or health official in a county or state that went after them or whatever, they would dispatch a team of lawyers with an unlimited checkbook, just make it go away and seal the record. All right. So all the people who had gotten discovery when they were involved in these lawsuits, they all got settled and the record got sealed. So a few years ago, a group of prosecutors and citizens started going after the Sacklers and going after Purdue. And that's what they did. They all had agreed, we're just going to file and file and file and file. And someplace in the United States of America is a judge who's going to unseal some of those records. And it was Dan Polster in Ohio, Northern Ohio, who actually took the action and said that these people are going to be brought to justice over this stuff. And so, and of course, the Sacklers, this is the way the system works. I think they only have $6 billion left, and they're very concerned about their future. And to tell you how disconnected, you talk about how bad it is, how disconnected they are. One of the Sacklers, it was the one of the women who's a doctor, they're all doctors. She said to Congress, straight face, that she didn't think that people in America understood how hard this has been on them, because they've become social outcasts. I'll tell you what, you kill 500,000 people and you expect me to be concerned about the fact that you're not invited to the black tie events in New York anymore? And you really think that that's an okay thing to say on camera in public? It tells you really how much things had degenerated. But my whole point was that it worked there and it'll work here, because if we file and file and file, we will get what we want. And then
let me interrupt for 1 second.
Sure.
People don't know a lot about the Sacklers and the opiates. Just give a couple of sentences so they know exactly what the Sacklers were doing.
Yeah. Well, what they did and the fact that they could do it is amazing, right? They got away with it for so long and they're going to get away with billions of dollars. The Sackler family came over here from Europe. If you read this book, you have a little sympathy for them. They were Jewish immigrants. And even when the boys, there were three sons, went to medical school, two had to go out of the country because there were Jewish quotas in medical schools and this sort of thing. So there was a bit of chip on the shoulder. We want to be important people. We want to take advantage of the American dream. But Arthur Sackler, who was the older brother, who was the leader of the pack, definitely... there was something wrong with all of them from an ethics standpoint, but he really led the pack on unethical behavior. And he got in some trouble, but he managed to talk his way out of it all the time. And they had bought this company, Purdue. And long story how they ended up deciding that they were going to get in the opiate business, but they developed this time-release OxyContin. And their claim was, they made a claim that there was an epidemic of untreated pain in the United States, and that oxy and opiates were not addictive when prescribed for pain, particularly with a timed release product like oxy. And they sent their drug reps out to tell that story.
Now, what company were they sending out? Were they doing the pharmaceutical stuff?
Purdue. It was Purdue that owned the company. It was a private company. It wasn't publicly held. They owned the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so they sent their drug reps out. And this is where it gets really interesting. The drug reps were telling doctors, according to a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, Porter and Jick, I don't know if you've heard this story, the opiates are not addictive, all right, when they're prescribed for pain. Porter and Jick was a two-paragraph editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine that said, when you prescribe opiates in the hospital, people do not get addicted. It certainly was nothing to do with doctors writing script for opiates and doctors' offices all over the country. Now, we've got major problems here.
Or the alternative markets that the OxyContin got into, and people were chewing them instead of taking them as prescribed. Right?
Exactly. And so you've got a problem. The drug was approved by the FDA, and then the drug reps are lying, but that's okay. They never got in trouble for doing it. Doctors heard drug reps say, OxyContin's not addictive. There's an epidemic of untreated pain. And referring to this article in the New England Journal of Medicine, apparently none of them bothered to read it. They started writing script. And the Federation of State Medical Boards issued new guidelines on how to regulate the prescribing of these drugs and practices. I mean, it's just a massive episode of corruption that should, but by the time this all was coming to light a few years ago, we should have learned that medicine needed reform, the FDA needed reform, everything needed reform. We did nothing about it. And so here we are in the midst of this COVID mess. What can you expect if you let that kind of thing go, right? I'll tell you my silver lining in the cloud kind of thing. And I wrote about this in my book. I think that we're going to look back on this and be happy that it happened from this perspective. I'm not happy about the kids tortured, the suicides, the deaths. I mean, there's no excuse for that, and the people will pay. But I'm 64 years old, and since I've been an adult, I've been hearing about education reform. I haven't seen any education reform.
No, well, it's gotten worse.
It's gotten worse. Since I've been a thinking person, we need reform in the medical system. You seen any meaningful reform? Not so much. Okay. Well, government, we need government reform. Gets worse. Sometimes you just have to blow it all up. It's easier to blow it up and start from scratch. That's what we're doing. And you mentioned at the beginning about it being like, you know, the Revolutionary War all over again, right? We're kind of reestablishing our freedoms in our country from the ground up. We're taking our country back again. And that's what we have to do. And we'll rebuild it the way we want it to be rebuilt. And that might be easier than trying to fix it, because we sure did try for a long time. It didn't work out so well.
Well, it's just a wonder to hear everything you're doing. And you're so inspiring. You've always been inspiring to me. And folks, it's just so important. We just need a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need 50 or 100 million. We don't need 30 or 40% of the population, really. I mean, if we can get a significant portion of freedom-loving Americans to stand up, other people will hear and other people will back down. And we can, and it's already happening. I mean, they couldn't go on with the COVID-19 oppression the way they've wanted to. Unfortunately, they got pretty far in by vaccinating, you know, God, so what is the vaccination rate in America now? I've lost track of it. They're claiming 70% or something?
No way. No way.
What is it?
I think it's more like 30%. Because there's no way that they could possibly be throwing away all these doses, and they wouldn't have done these lotteries. And they're saying, you know, all of this hysteria and lotteries, it's because it isn't working out so well. They were closing the vaccine centers months ago because people weren't showing up. So I think that the whole idea was to, you know, a needle in every arm, and I don't think that they're anywhere close to cutting it. And so what they got was the third of the population that would line up for just about anything you asked them to do, who were definitely terrified of this whole thing, misled.
Yeah, frightened.
And then the rest of us said, no way.
Well, I'm certainly hoping that's what the data will be. And folks, you know, Pam mentioned in the beginning that back in March, over a year ago, that she was saying that this was planned. And I think that I probably heard her saying that, and I just got this ice in my heart and wouldn't listen. And then I just went and did what I do and what Ginger and I do so well. We do deep dives into scientific literature. And the more we looked at what was going on, I think that if you read our book, you're going to see the science, the politics, the history indicates a plan that was in full motion by 2017.
Mm-hmm.
They were planning Operation Warp Speed and had it up and running 3 years before it was needed.
Mm-hmm.
They were bringing together the federal government to fine-tune how they were going to rush through the vaccines without testing them in any significant way. I mean, for example, folks, we just had a new vaccine approved for Ebola after 20 years. It takes a long time to get even a faint idea about the safety of a vaccine. Average years run like 12, 15 years, and they pushed this through in a few months. And just to give you one tidbit that that we tracked in COVID-19 and the global predators, study after study was done on the RNA and the DNA vaccines, the basic vaccines that are being given out right now. One after another animal study going back 2008, 9, 10, 11, and they were all showing that it was very dangerous, that it induced in animals these extreme reactions that we later have, you know, come to identify as these massive overreactions of the whole immune system, the antibodies, the T cells, and that animals that were exposed and then given the drug instead of having given the vaccine instead of getting immunity, often died from the combined reaction from what the virus did plus then what these vaccines were doing, because they mimic the virus. They just get your body to produce a chunk of the virus that's very deadly, the spike protein. That's not good for your body. All of this was unraveling, and even in the midst of Operation Warp Speed in 2020, out comes a scientific review saying we shouldn't be doing this because it is so bad for animals. We shouldn't be going into human beings, and yet it was on now that tens of millions, hundreds of millions of human beings are going to be experimental guinea pigs. So that's how bad it is. And it made me think again that maybe the worst case scenario was true. Maybe they actually like culling the population. They've been talking about too many people. They haven't said, let's go kill them. I mean, they can't do that. I don't even think Hitler quite said that in Mein Kampf. Let's just go murder them all. Just said we'd do without them. They're better off dead and so on and so forth. And so it looks like they didn't stop the vaccine because A, they were too interested in billions of dollars, and B, they knew all along it was going to kill a lot of people because it was doing it to animals. And it just fit with the whole cowing of the population. We're just going to make these folks sheep for our big farms. And that's what they're doing to us. And they've succeeded to a great extent. I'm fighting, Pam, Ginger's fighting, Pam's fighting, and Tom Renz is fighting. So folks, get out there and fight too, because these really are malicious forces. They're not messed up or confused. They don't know what they're doing. Fauci's not a fool, not stupid. They really have known what they're doing for quite some time. Fits in with a Marxist philosophy, fits in with a very materialistic philosophy, and that's who they are.
Yes, and we are going to win.
We are going to win. Let's end on that. We are going to win. Win. Thank you. God bless you, Pam Popper. I love being here. I just love knowing that you're there and alive and doing so many things. My own portion is like this sort of narrow, and you're doing this sort of broad. And God bless you.
Thank you.